Well, I remember it was a Saturday morning, and I was just a tad hungover, and I was dragging myself through this 10-mile run with a very chipper former boss of mine, when I realized this is total crap. I would not be doing this if this lady did not sign my paychecks. And it turns out my experience was not that unique. In his latest Cubicle Culture column, Jared Sandberg of The Wall Street Journal talks about the many ways that bosses' hobbies have a way of sort of becoming their employees' hobbies, whether they like it or not. Hi, Jared.
Good morning, folks.
There were two anecdotes in your piece that really jumped out at me. One was this boss who basically force-fed her employees chocolate, and the other was a guy who almost killed his staff with his glider.
Yeah.
Please do explain.
Well, the force-feeding was sort of there was a boss who, she really liked chocolate. I guess she was a chocoholic, and she basically said...
See, that sounds like alcoholic, but it's different.
She basically said, if you want to stay in this department, you're going to have to learn to love chocolate. And I had visions of this guy with sweat dripping down his forehead, you know, because he didn't like chocolate. So he would basically wait until the coast was clear after she gave him chocolate, wrap it up and re-gift it to someone later, and really never figured out how to get along with this woman. His colleagues warned her, no, really, it's not a joke. It's a big thing to her. You gotta learn to like chocolate. The other case was a vice president of international sales who, during a sales conference, offered very nicely, invited anyone who wanted to go in his glider to go with them. So he had five...
Like sales. A hang glider?
You know, like one of those...
Experimental
falling
aircraft?
Falling gracefully through the sky gliders.
Oh, like a little plane, sort of those two-seater gliders?
Yeah, two-seater.
Oh, got it.
Oh, my gosh.
And they were sitting in the front, and he was steering from the back. And the first two rides went well. And then ride number three was a woman who was screaming from liftoff to landing. Ride number four went okay, except for a sudden drop in altitude, which made them nearly miss the runway. And by the time he was ready to pick up ride number five, ride number three had clearly talked ride number five out of it.
Or screamed him out of it.
Or screamed
him. As the case may have been.
So, you know, this vice president decided that he was never going to sort of offer, you know, or involve his hobbies in the workplace unless, you know, one of his you know, staffers asked first.
But can't you, after something like that, march your little self right up to HR and say, I'm not having any more of this. I'm not going up in the air with my boss in a vehicle or aircraft without a engine.
Well, the interesting thing is that the boss didn't pressure anyone. It was their own internal social pressures or the pressure they imposed on themselves to ingratiate themselves. I mean, when this happens, people respond in one of two ways. Either they do not care, they feel forced, as Luke did, to run 10 miles during a hangover.
And be embarrassed by, like, a 48-year-old woman.
Right.
But that's beside the point.
But, you know, you either feel forced to do it, or there's another group of people who see it as an opportunity to get ahead, and it sort of promotes this bootlickocracy within the organization.
Well, because, I mean, that's the thing, I mean, to Allison's question, which is that there are about 100 things a day you could probably go to HR over. But do you want to be the person who... HR calls your boss and says, Allison didn't like going in your glider. You can't take her and you're prohibited from taking her up in your glider. I mean, isn't that bad professionally if you do try to sort of curb this stuff with HR?
To me, the whole difference would be made from who that HR executive is. There's no way in the world that you or I would go to someone, an HR executive, who we think would handle a situation indelicately. So no matter how bad a situation is, you're not going to go to someone who you do not trust. And the fact of the matter is HR is always sort of struggling with the perception that they're there, you know, to help the employees, which they are, and the fact is that they could just turn around and report people to their boss. So this has been an age-old problem for people. Do you trust HR to do it? And I think it totally depends on who's sitting in that HR office. I mean, there was one woman, an HR executive, who got complaints like this all the time, and this one executive wanted to learn tango because, but his boss, his own wife, wouldn't participate with him. So he forced his secretary to do it. She went.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
At least it wasn't the lambada.
Yeah, although,
I mean,
you know,
there's that.
Tango just strikes me as a particularly cruel thing to make someone do.
Right, someone who's not into it.
Right.
So did the guy end up – did he actually make the assistant do it?
Yeah. She went to three lessons with him, and she really hated it, and she kept on reporting it to HR executive. And it was only when the HR executive raised the specter of, you know, a potential lawsuit, if this kind of, you know, got out of hand because tango tends to be sort of romantic in the first place. Only then did he relent, but he was under the impression that she really loved it when in fact she really hated it. So at least that HR executive, when I asked, you know, God, did that really ruin their relationship? The HR executive said, no, it didn't ruin their relationship. It ruined my relationship with the executive. So, I mean, there are those cases where, you know, it will be handled. And I guess even gingerly can cause problems.
I guess this is the final question on this, though, I think the kind of overarching one, which is like, is it better to have a boss who loves hang gliding and loves you so much that they want those two things to happen at the same time, even at your own peril, or a boss who's kind of cool and removed and more quote-unquote professional but maybe less likely to stick up for you when the chips are down? I mean, isn't it better to have a boss who is a little clueless but is really into you?
You know, I think we can have there's a third option. You know, I mean, I think you can have a boss who's loyal to you. I think you can have a boss who has interests and it seems like a real human being. But I think there are many bosses who've responded to this article and said, listen, you know, they don't push it. If anything, they allow employees to set any activities and they participate in them. And I think it's important. I think managers have to be sensitive to the signals that they send to people. And, you know, not everyone, I know I'm going to get struck down for this, not everyone really likes golf, you know. You know, I think it's important for people to recognize that, you know, they can be an excellent employee without, you know, wanting to schlep along 18 holes of golf.
Jared Sandberg writes the column Cubicle Culture for The Wall Street Journal, friend of the Bryant Park Project as well. Thanks, Jared.
Thank you, Lou.
Thanks, Jared. You know what? Here, can I tell you my story quickly?
Please.
Big executive, nicest guy, one day calls us all into the conference room, and we're all kind of freaked out because he's kind of new. And we get there, and there is cheesecake in there the size of a tire and pictures of his new grandson all over the room. And we were doing a live TV show. I mean, people had to make air dates and cut tape and everything. And he made everybody sit, have cheesecake. And he was cutting wedges the size of, you know, a small thesaurus.
This was a tire made of thesauri? I'm getting confused.
I'm trying to explain how big it was and how we were all on time crunch and how he made everybody sit there and eat cheesecake in celebration of his grandson. It was really a nice idea, but everybody sort of, I mean, and if you weren't eating that cheesecake, hey, you eat up that's good. It's from Junior's.
It was
one of those cringe moments.
There seems to be an inverse relationship between how little you want to eat something and how much the people giving it to you then really want you to eat it. No one's ever been to me like, eat that double-double from In-N-Out. You eat that.
But his kid was cute, though. But as you can tell, this has seared my memory. All right, I've derailed us.